This is a podcast from Minute Media.
Hello, and welcome to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason, and with me, as usual, is Rich. Hello, Rich.
Hello, it's back.
It is, baby.
Yeah.
Over and Back Podcast, we're back. Basketball is back. The NBA is back.
They came back because we came back, right? I think that's how it worked. I forget who came first. I forget if the NBA season started because of us or we. I don't know which it was, but
it's a chicken or an egg thing.
Yeah, probably, right. We're both back. That's all you need to know. So
exactly, yes. The 2022 NBA season. That I don't really understand why people are making such a big deal about the NBA's 72nd anniversary. It seems weird to me, but
yeah, they've been using diamonds, and I was always under the impression that diamonds were the 75th anniversary because, like, the logo is different, but it's like NBA 72, and it's a diamond. It's just very confusing messaging. So I'm not sure what it's doing here, but it's very, very strange how this NBA 72 is such a big deal when it's not even a round number. It's not even a number that anybody really cares about.
Well, it is a round number, but it's not, you know.
I wasn't very good at math, Jason. So don't
that's correct.
Why
that's
do you think I got into communications, Jason?
Fair enough. Hey.
Because I thought 72 wasn't a round number. A nice, easy round number, I should say.
Sure. But, yeah.
Is it a prime number, hot shot, or what?
Yeah. Oh, man, that's stretching my math skills.
Yeah, all right.
And I'm a programmer, so that's that's tricky. So I used to be a journalist, so it's that's where I consider my math skills to be, and the journalist. Yes. Obviously we're kidding. NBA... Yeah, we've discussed this on the show before. We'll be discussing it throughout the season because, the NBA decided to lie about its age, decided it wanted to
added be years.
Years older.
Yeah, it added years. I mean, when you lie about your age, you're supposed to say, no, I'm 70, you know?
Right.
Like everyone's like, hey, are you guys 75? Like, no, we're only 70. We're still young. They added 3 years. What are they doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's great. Well, you know what? I did some digging, Rich.
You've gotten to the bottom of this, of why this is happening?
I found out why the NBA is lying about its age. Investigative report, exclusive to Over and Back. I figured it out. Okay. So let's flash back. The year is 1966.
Okay.
The NBA, 16 years old, you know, feisty teenager, you know, looking to rebel. You know, it's 60s, you know, it's looking to, you know, get far out and, you know, go with it and do things. So
yeah, listening to the mamas and the papas and
you know, they're experimenting, you know,
LSD. Yeah. Why not? What's the worst that could happen? So.
Maybe not LSD quite yet. That was more early 70s.
That's true. Anyway, that's true.
So 16 years old, NBA venturing out, decides, hey, I want to go to the bars, man. I want to go drink. I want to get out there and I want to, you know, razzle dazzle.
Yeah, drink some Falstaff or whatever terrible beer you could drink in a bar in 1966.
Absolutely.
So.
Absolutely. So, you know, I'm obviously, like, okay, 16 years old, he can't get into a bar. So what does the NBA do? The NBA gets a fake ID. And it decides, well, I'm not going to be 2 years older than I am, 18. They're going to know. They're going to understand that. They're going to say, I'm going to be 3 years older. So 19 years old. Sneaks into the bar, gets in, you know, has a great time. Guess who the NBA meets that very night?
That night. So the night they sneak into the bar.
Right.
At 19 years old with their fake ID.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. He's a dapper young lawyer.
Oh, it's David Stern, isn't it?
David Stern, yes. Meets David Stern.
What's David Stern's drink of choice, you think?
Ooh, I think David Stern's a gin and tonic.
I was going to say something like some gin or some sort of, like, you know. Yeah, it's not because he's not like a martini guy. He's not that classy, but he's classier than beer. He's not drinking beer. He's not a beer
he's
guy.
He's not drinking beer. No, definitely not a beer guy. So, you know, a dapper young lawyer, you know, hotshot firm. It meets David Stern and begins starts with the NBA as an outside counsel. Then later in the 70s becomes general counsel, then becomes the league's vice president, finally locks it down, becomes the commissioner, locks it down. And for, you know, 30 years, commissioner, you know, develops a lifelong relationship. Now, obviously, you know, when the NBA first met, David Stern said, yeah, I'm 19. It's all good. You know, I'm not 16. And I mean, once you lie about that, once you set the initial lie, you can't say later, like, oh, by the way, I was fudging my age by 3 years. it can't do it. Has to embrace the lie. So that's why the NBA says 3 years older than it is. David Stern.
There it is. Wow. Okay. Yeah. We've gotten to the bottom of it. Yeah. It's right. I've heard other theories, but I like your theory the best. Yeah, I've heard some you know, some other ones.
Okay, other theories.
Dr. Curtis Harris has brought some to the light of just, you know.
Because he's a doctor.
Yeah, like he knows he knows history better than you do. Yeah. I know, it's ridiculous.
Weird. Yeah. Oh.
But especially right. NBA history.
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
But it's a very strange thing, and we're going to be annoying about it a little bit all year. I think we're probably still going to do some NBA 75 things. We should probably play along.
Yeah, a little bit,
And they're announcing their 75th team this week, and people are going to get really mad about it, so that'll be fun content. So we are going to embrace it in some way, but we are going to be a little annoying about it, too. So.
We'll be properly sassy about the whole affair. Yeah, I don't know. At an outrage meter, I'm like a 4, I guess, maybe. I don't know, 4 to 5 on the outrage meter. I don't know where
it's too late now. You know what I mean? Like, I think, like, last year, it was like peak, like, what are you doing? Like, that's not really, but they've already kind of set the you can't have like their 50th celebration and then be like, oh, our bad, like it's actually like this. You know what I mean? Like, you can't go back. You can't.
Well,
put it back,
what would David Stern think? First of all, you know, I mean, that was you couldn't do that. I mean, you're locked in by 50, certainly. I mean, you're locked in at 23, you know. It's you have no choice. So it
is a little strange, but obviously if there's ways to, you know, if you want to dig in a little bit more of why that is or why the case is, a lot of, you know, weird stuff of the NBL, the BAA, when they switch the names, all that sort of stuff, which leagues they count as quote unquote pro leagues, which leagues they count as, you know, their history and their lineage. And it's very strange how they chose what they chose. But we have talked about it on the show before. And,
We actually probably will talk about it seriously at some point.
Yeah. You know, no, we will definitely do like a why are they, you know, why is the NBA lying about its age? Will definitely be the episode name of one that we have very soon. So
not the one that I just made up about David Stern. Yeah. So okay. All right. Cool.
What do you mean made up? Are you kidding?
I
wrote an article about it. I'm already in.
Oh wow. Damn. Ugh. Awkward. All right. So So the theme of the show is actually not about why the NBA is lying about its age. That's only the preamble. What we're going to talk about is major potential milestones of the 2022 season, how the 2022 NBA season will make history, perhaps. So what do we got, Rich?
So we got a few different things here in terms of major milestones that are going to happen. So the key one that seems almost an inevitable lock to happen this year, barring injury, barring catastrophe, whatever, Steph Curry will become the NBA's all-time leading three-point shooter. He is only 141 threes away from matching Ray Allen's all-time three-pointers made record. Curry made 337 last year in just 63 games, and he's made over 141 in every single non-injury season he's played. So barring the, you know, other than the year when he played 5 games, or other than the year he rolled his ankle and only played 14 or whatever games, he has gotten well over that mark every single year. So it is an inevitable lock here, I think, that Steph Curry, again, barring injury, barring catastrophe, is going to end at some point in the season, become the NBA's all-time three-point leader and continue to add and add and add into that. And who knows how easy it'll be for anybody to get there. But yeah, what do you think about that? Is that to you, are you ready for Steph Curry to be the all-time leaders in 3 points? Because I kind of am, you know, I'm fine with that, I think.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, he is the person who, you know, most personifies how the game has evolved in terms of the 3-point, in terms of, you know, the volume that he shot, the effectiveness, how he basically took the three and made himself into one of the most dangerous, if not perhaps at his peak, the most dangerous offensive weapon in NBA history.
Yeah.
You know, to do that and driving, you know, a dynasty that, you know, won 3 straight championships and made 5 finals in 5 years. And, you know, it'll be, we can talk about this a little bit more later, and, you know, we'll see if they can run it back, and if with all the guys healthy, if they have a chance to extend that, you know, I think it's a long shot at this point, but I don't see it out of the realm of possibilities.
Yeah, so. It'll be really fun if they come back and they're competitive. Right. But I'm fine with it too. Yeah. Like it being Ray Allen, I think kind of helps. It's not like this, like, you know, historic legendary player. Like, that's nothing to take away anything from Ray Allen, but like we saw most of it. I mean, most people listening to this saw most of his career, so it's not like this. Oh my! You know, when you start breaking Kareem's records and you start breaking Wilt Chamberlain's records or Bill Russell's records, it's like, oh man. Man, like, a part of NBA history is like dramatically changing forever, but like,
sure,
Ray Allen's record, that's fine. You know what I mean? And it being, like you said, it being so clearly the best three-point shooter of all time, a guy that completely revolutionized the three-pointer and made it what it is, I think it's perfect for Steph Curry to get this record, and yeah. So I can't wait for him to do it. This is one that I'm definitely in favor of and excited to see it happen. But what is interesting about this as well, and then we'll move on to some other stuff here, is that James Harden is fifth all time right now as well, which again, like, it makes sense, like, because he's James Harden, but it's also like, oh man, he's already like there, he's already at that level. It says a lot about today's NBA, but it also says a lot about James Harden as well. He is just 6 threes away from passing Kyle Korver. I am not watching the Brooklyn Nets game, but there's a possibility he might do that tonight. So I think he's probably going to, at some point over the next week, pass Kyle Korver for fourth all-time, and he's 116 away from Reggie for third all-time. So he had 121 last year when he played in only 44 games. So you'd have to go all the way back to 2012 to find a season where he did not at least get 114 threes. So he is going to end the year almost inevitably, again, barring injury or whatever. He is going to end the year, I think, third all-time in three-pointers. So it'll be Steph Curry, Ray Allen, and James Harden when it's all said and done. So an interesting shakeup there in the all-time three-pointers made list coming up this year.
Does it surprise you at all that LeBron James is 13th all-time in three-pointers?
That does. It absolutely does. Yeah. That, I know that he's played forever.
Right.
I just, like, yeah, he makes threes, but no, that is wild. That is wild. And he's one of those weird ones that when it's all said and done, he's going to be, like, top 15 in, like, literally every record just because he's just always playing.
He played forever.
Yeah.
And that's obviously, I mean, like, Steph Curry wouldn't have broken it this fast if he played, you know, 10 years earlier, but he probably would be number one all time in his career had he, you know, even if he played 10 years earlier, just because, he would obviously be shooting a lot of threes no matter what. Just obviously the rate exploded incredibly during his career. LeBron's more of a case of, the second half of his career in particular played during the explosion of threes. So he took a lot, even though, he's obviously not one of the, he's not a particularly great three-point shooter. He's fine. He's okay at it, but it's not, that's more of a right place, right time thing where Steph is more of a,
he made that time.
Combination. a combination of that. Exactly. Yeah. So not like a Barry Bond situation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Right. Exactly. Well, we're talking about LeBron James. So let's jump into this right now. LeBron James, he's turning 37 in December, his 19th NBA season, which, he's starting to get in record books just for that in terms of, just playing for as long as he is. He's right on the cusp of passing Karl Malone for second all-time in scoring and field goals made. I'm definitely rooting for that to happen. Sure. James is 1,561 points away from tying Malone. He's averaged more than 1,600 in each of the last four seasons. So if he stays healthy, I think he can do this relatively easily past Karl Malone. So it's all about health. And obviously he's been slowing down a little bit over the last few years in terms of scoring output, but the Lakers aren't the deepest team in the league. So I think there's a real, real strong possibility that LeBron, if he stays healthy all year, plays most of the season, will be able to pass Karl Malone and become second all time. Now, as far as Kareem, and we've done these episodes for a few years, these this guy will make history and this stuff. And LeBron, we've always been talking about LeBron becoming, tying Kareem or getting near Kareem for most all time. He's getting there, but it's going to be tough. It felt like a few years ago we were really on the trajectory, but he's kind of slowed down a little bit. Those injuries have kind of played a factor into it. He's still 3,020 away from doing that.
Yeah. Well, that's really, like, if he has two healthy-ish seasons of similar production, he's almost there, right?
Yeah. We really have to, and, like, this year will be a key. Like, if he's healthy all year and he's good all year, and it's like, okay. But I get how some people are like, man, maybe we're starting to finally see this guy start to slow down a little bit. But I think really is a healthy season from him and be like, oh, he's good to go. So, I think he'll do it. Like, I really do think he'll do it. I just think it's might be a little tougher than it was a couple years ago where it felt like inevitable. I mean, we were having that conversation when he, the final year in Cleveland. It's like, this guy, he can go play for another 10 years at this point. Like, he's going to, if his goal is to play with Bronny, his goal is to play at least three or four more years, I think he can probably do it.
I think if he plays that long, I think if he plays 4 years, he's
Like attrition wise, like even if he's close, like that team's gonna feed him. You know what I mean? Like they're not gonna be like, LeBron, sorry, you have to come off the bench because like he's like, no, I'm freaking LeBron James. I'm 42 years old. Like let me shoot the ball. They're gonna probably let him shoot the ball, and maybe it'll be some pathetic team and kind of be like the Kobe thing where they're just like, whatever, just go. It's your team. Like, whatever.
Sure.
But I'm down. I mean, he deserves that at that
point. Whatever. That's fine. No, that works.
I don't think LeBron taking like an eighth man off the bench role and having to like slog through like three seasons of like 500 points scored. I don't think that's happening anytime soon.
I mean, he'll still, I mean, I would think he would still be a good player in 3 years, but yeah, not probably not a top 10 player anymore, but probably still, you know, good enough to be, you know, a good starter on an NBA team.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, who knows? I mean, yeah, 3 years is a long time. I mean, it's
it definitely
but
is.
I think, yeah, I would say like 70-30, he breaks the record.
I agree. Yeah, yeah, I agree for sure. Yeah. Other potential LeBron milestones here real quick. Field goals. He's pretty close from tying Karl Malone as well. So he needs 625, and 2 years ago he made 643, but, you know, last year it was 422. So yeah, it's going to be a little bit. It won't be this year, but maybe next year he'll be able to get that. Unless, like, things get really bad in Lakerland. You need LeBron James to score a lot of points, which is probably not good for the Lakers if that's the case. Some other quick ones for LeBron as well. He ranks sixth right now in total minutes. Has a very solid chance of passing Jason Kidd, Kevin Garnett, and Dirk Nowitzki this season if he plays similar minutes to what he did the last 3 to 4 years. So he'll move up that ladder as well. And then this one's interesting, too. He only needs 112 free throws to tie Oscar Robertson for fourth all-time in free throws made. Are you surprised that he's not higher up in that list?
I mean, I guess I would need to look at that list, I guess. I mean, yeah, I mean, he gets the line certainly fairly well. Maybe not among the – well, I mean, probably guys – older guys also used to take more free throws.
Exactly. Yeah, it's yeah. And if you look at the list, it's Karl Malone, Moses Malone – Kobe Bryant, interestingly enough, is there as well. Yeah, Oscar Robertson and LeBron James. Now, I do not think he's got, I mean, he needs a lot more to pass Karl Malone. Karl Malone has 9,787. I don't think that's happening. I don't think he's matching that. But who knows? Again, we have no idea. LeBron is timeless. But yeah, it's more blended than you would think. Because I kind of thought, oh man, okay, it's obviously going to be just a bunch of big dudes. It's going to be your Kareems. And that's and like Kareem's like 11th. You know what I mean? Kareem's tied with Dolph Shays. At 11th. Michael Jordan is 6th. He passed him last year. Oscar Robertson is 4th, as we said. Kobe Bryant 3rd. Dirk Nowitzki 7th. Jerry West is 8th. So it's a little bit more. Adrian Dantley, your boy Adrian Dantley, he's 10th. So
I love Adrian Dantley.
You, just like most of his teammates, love Adrian Dantley. So
I love him more than
more than all of his teammates. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
But yeah, so it's interesting. He I think he'll move up that ladder. I don't think he's going to pass Karl Malone to ever become the most prolific free throw shooter of all time. But he might contend with Kobe for third all time at some point.
That's a lot of damn free throws that Karl Malone had.
Yeah, what's going on there in Utah, man? Like, he's hitting free throws. Stockton's getting assists. Like, they have like nuts records that you're like, what the hell? They're so far ahead of everybody. How'd this happen?
Yeah, it never really particularly occurred to me that he was. I mean, I never would occur to me that he was that far ahead in terms of he's, you know, 800 free throws ahead of the next, you know, highest person, Moses Malone, and 1,500 almost ahead of Kobe. So that's
3,000 more than Kareem Abdul-Jabbar has.
Like, right. Yeah.
When did that happen?
That's
games had to occur that Karl Malone got 3,000 more free throws than
That's pretty wild.
Kareem. What?
Yeah. Wow. Interesting.
Do they just not count free throws in the 70s? Like, what are we doing here?
They're
like, oh, shoot. Yeah, we should have counted that. Well, we didn't. So, whatever. Well, sorry.
Yeah. No, that's interesting. Yeah. Okay. Well, fun. Yeah. Next, I like this one. So, you know, there are possibility of some players who could join the three MVP clubs. So, the players with three or more MVPs. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, he has 6. Bill Russell, Michael Jordan, they each have 5. Will Chamberlain, LeBron James, they each have 4. And Moses Malone, or excuse me, Julius Irving also has 4. Only one NBA and also has 3 in the ABA. One of those was a tie. So I don't know. We'll call it 3.5. And then Moses Malone, Larry Bird, and Magic Johnson each have 3. So, you know, I would say last year, you know, Steph Curry, also 2-time MVP, finished 3rd last year. Giannis Antetokounmpo, obviously he finished 4th last year, but with, you know, how he played in the playoff, particularly in the finals, I think there might be some sentiment that like, oh yeah, he's actually the best player in the game. We shouldn't have voted him 4th last year. And, you know, could definitely see either one of those guys being a candidate to be a 3-time MVP. I don't think LeBron at this point anymore, unless he has an incredible season, is really a candidate to be an MVP anymore. He hasn't won one since 2013. So, you know, he's generally been high in the voting, although obviously two of the last 3 years he's had pretty significant injuries, so hasn't played, you know, full season. But
I think if you're the Lakers, you probably don't want him. Like, it would be a bad move. You know what I mean? Like, it would be like the fact that he would be playing that many minutes and scoring that. I mean, that would be a bad thing for the Lakers, probably. They probably are hoping that it doesn't happen. But man, that'd be really cool if all of a sudden LeBron's just like, all right, I'm good. I'm like incredible again. Like, I'm great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I'm with you. I do not think I would bet on LeBron winning an MVP ever again. So,
no. Yeah. So, yeah, it'd be interesting. I don't know. Do you have anyone else? I mean, I think obviously Jokic, you know, certainly you would be, you know, maybe a candidate to repeat, although and Embiid obviously it was fantastic last year. If they if the Sixers do better than people think they might do, I think that would, I don't know if Jokic really, unless he's just an incredible above everybody
else
season.
It's given really how tough.
I think, yeah, Denver would have to just, you know, be, or either he would have to be incredible or Denver would have to be incredible or both for that.
Yeah, and James Harden, I think he's going to struggle to do it, because I think him and Durant are probably going to split votes. I've seen Durant as a popular favorite, and I'm you know, I think that's a good
possible
pick. But I always think it's going to be tough when you have James Harden there and both those guys are going to be contenders. It just makes it more difficult instead of like a guy that's, you know, clearly the top guy on a very, very good team. I think they usually have a better chance of doing it. But who knows? There's always some weird surprises too. Maybe Luka, you know, comes out of nowhere and does it. But yeah. But as far as like two-time guys, I can't think of too many guys off the top of my head.
Agree. Yeah. All right. Star of your favorite commercial is Chris Paul.
Yes.
He's got some milestones coming on. Yeah.
Right before we got on the air here, I got very disappointed that they did not redo or make a new Chris Paul State Farm commercial this year. And it's still the ones, or the one I saw was his, you know, his kid dunking on the trampoline.
Sure.
I forget what the other one is, but I'm sure it'll play in the next 10 minutes or so here. Remember it. Chris Paul, he has over 10,000 assists, which puts him in very rare company. Only a few other guys have over 10,000 assists. Mark Jackson, 10,334. Nash, 10,335. Jason Kidd, Steve Nash getting one more assist than Mark Jackson's career is pretty awesome.
That's good.
That's good. Yeah. Thank you.
That makes his Lakers tenure just totally worth it.
Exactly, right? Yeah. The pathetic, horrible tenure of Steve Nash just laying down with a towel on his face.
Yeah.
It made it all worth it just to have one more assist than Mark Jackson. Jason Kidd, 12,091. And then Jock Stockton, 15,806.
Yeah.
So Chris Paul trails Mark Jackson by 59 assists. I think he's going to do that. He had 622 last year, so I think he's going to pass Mark Jackson. He's obviously only 60 away from Steve Nash. I believe he's also going to pass Steve Nash as well.
Right.
He is still 5,531 away from John Stockton, which, okay, all Chris Paul has to do, Jason. So I said he had 622 last year.
Right.
You just got to run that back 8 more years, and then he could do it. So, you know.
Like, 8 more years?
Can Chris Paul play 8 more years? I say yes. No, okay.
Theoretically possible.
Imagine how much of a curmudgeon asshole Chris Paul is going to be when he's 48 years old. He's just like, God damn it. How big's that butt going to be, too? You know what I mean?
It gets
bigger every year.
It does get bigger every year,
He's because, I mean, I get it.
In all fairness, yeah.
I was going to say, I get it because I'm 33 and I'm like, have impossible ways to lose weight and I'm getting bigger every year. So, good for him to...
Yeah.
He'll be in great shape, but only 8 more years of what he did last year, and then he can get near John Stockton.
Okay, so. Hey, sounds reasonable.
Goals. That's all it is.
Goals.
So.
Yeah.
And then steals. Chris Paul is fifth all time in steals, 113 away from Gary Payton for number two. He had 99 steals last year, 111 2 years ago, and 114 3 years ago. So this one may be tough.
Outside chance. But...
Very outside chance. Speaking of John Stockton, he also has the most steals of all time. Chris Paul only needs 933 more steals to match John Stockton. So
9 seasons? Maybe?
Yeah, he just needs 9 seasons. So if he plays 9 seasons and doesn't ever get worse than he was last year, when he was really, really good, he can probably contend for both those.
And stay healthy, absolutely.
Right.
So it's very interesting. 2 years in a row, Chris Paul, the last 2 years he played 70 games. The previous 2 years played 58 games. Very repeating that number
keeps his injuries very consistent.
So fun times. So
there you go. All right.
Yeah.
Tell me about Dwight Howard.
I would love to tell you. About
you love talking about Dwight Howard.
Yes, I do. Yeah. So So Dwight Howard, a bit of an enigma. I think that's fair.
I don't know if it's a bit.
more than a bit. A large enigma. So Dwight Howard is really one of the best big men to ever play in the NBA. If you look at his career accomplishments, both his peak and overall, yet, one hasn't really been a particularly good player in a while. He's certainly not a great player in a while, probably 7-8 years since he's been a great player, and isn't even necessarily been a good player in the last 3 or 4 years, let's say. He's about to move into 10th on the all-time rebounding list very soon. So he is about 200 rebounds behind Nate Thurman for 10th on that all-time list. Last year he had, how many rebounds did Dwight Howard have last year? Dwight Howard had 190 last year. So he's right, basically if he duplicates what he did last season, he would be right around there. I'm sorry. No, that was 190 offensive rebounds. 580. He's blowing by Nate Thurman. So probably going to pass Kevin Garnett too. Again, he played 69 games last year, which is a very Dwight Howard number to play.
It feels like he knew that and probably took a few games off to make sure that he could, and told everybody about it as well, much to the chagrin of everybody else around him.
He's definitely going there. He had 390 defensive rebounds, 580 total. He only played, played about 1200 minutes. So that seems like a reasonable role for him with the Lakers. Now the Lakers are a little bit, maybe big heavier than they are. I don't know. It's like the Lakers have a lot of guys, but they're all old. So you feel like they're all going to play 65 games.
They're all really, really old. So,
right. So, that'll be interesting. So he would, and if he, so he's getting close to guys like Robert Parrish, Karl Malone, who is, he's not destroying this record, unlike the other records he has. He's, seventh all time. So Dwight Howard, if he maintained the pace that he maintained, he would overtake Wilt Chamberlain, who has 23,924 rebounds, about 24 more seasons. So, it seemed the last headline is Dwight Howard going to play until he's 59 years old?
Yeah. I mean, maybe, but I really hope not. So, right. I don't think so. Yeah. I think he's pretty far away. So,
yeah. And he had 180 offensive rebounds. So, one behind Hakeem Olajuwon. Yeah. If he gets 120 more, he would pass Kevin Willis for seventh place. So, yeah. What's interesting about Dwight is I think he is probably the last elite big man, MVP type candidate center who didn't need to be a scoring threat from, outside the paint.
Right. Oh, no, yeah. I think it absolutely is. Yeah, and it's going to be really interesting to see if that ever does come back again, and it feels like it's just not going to. I mean, you had somebody like, DeAndre Ayton last year who surprised everybody and was but even then, he was nowhere near, MVP elite level. You're saying, the guy that, is going to be, one of the best players in the league and just, bullies people down low and dunks all the time. It seems so far-fetched these days that that's going to happen. So I would not bet on it ever happening again. Maybe some guy comes and he's just so good and so dominant that he completely changes the game back to the inside. Shot. But, I mean, now it is going to be very tough once NBA teams realize that three is more than two. So I don't know. Yeah.
Right. Well, I mean, I think Embiid would be that guy. You see how Embiid plays. He obviously is a great offensive player, inside, but, he obviously has that 3-point shot as well and, shoots from outside and, has a broader game. I think if anybody would do it, it would be Embiid. Now, if the next Shaq comes along, then I guess somebody being more of an offensive inside presence, but I think to be an effective, or at least to be a MVP level, center in the league, you have to be able to at least be a threat to score from.
And developmentally, it plays such a big role in how you come up. Pretty much every coach these days is probably going to see a big man and think, any smart coach, I think, would see a big man and figure out, okay, let's get you good at all facets of the game. Or that guy is going to want to be good at all facets of the game because he's watching Kevin Durant. He's watching Trae Young. He's watching Steph Curry. He's not watching, Kevin Willis tapes and saying, yeah, there we go. That's what I need to be. So Yeah, you're right. You're definitely right. And it makes him sort of a very interesting, weird case at this point as he kind of plays out the strings of his career. Well, this guy, speaking of big men that don't really shoot or do anything else, Rudy Gobert, can he become a four-time defensive player of the year? If so, he will join Dikembe Mutombo and Ben Wallace as the only four-time winners. And I think that is a very strong possibility that, he could do that. And anytime Rudy Gobert is in the league, I think he has a chance to become the defensive player of the year. So that'll be an interesting thing to keep an eye on for him. So do you want me to do these other ones real quick, and then we'll do the holdouts here?
That sounds good, yeah.
Let's do that. So Kevin Durant, 25,000 points in his career. He has 23,883 points in his career, so he's right on the doorstep of 25,000. He's 31st all-time, which is actually kind of interesting. I thought he'd be a little higher than that. And would need to pass Rick Barry, Reggie Miller I love how those guys tie. Just perfect attitude.
Yeah,
perfect dudes.
Exactly.
Like,
yeah, yeah.
The two guys that I feel like would get along with each other, but get along with nobody else. Or maybe they'd hate each other, but nobody would like them either. 25,279 for Rick Barry and Reggie Miller. That's all he needs to do to get into the top 25. Kevin Durant will continue to add to this. I'm just a little surprised he's only 31st all time. I would have thought, given how prolific of a scorer he was, he would be higher at this point. But he will continue to add that list over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. So
now he missed, obviously he missed one full season, and he missed a lot of another season with injuries. That's part of it, I think.
Right. The Russell Westbrook MVP year. Yeah, that is true.
Right.
So
that was before that because he left for.
Westbrook, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
It's like 27 games that year, you know, right after his MVP season, I think. So, I think that's part of it. But yeah, I was a little bit surprised he's higher. But yeah, I mean, it's not going to take that many more points. I mean, last season he only played 35 games. He had about 1,000 points. So, let's say he plays, around 70 games, would double that to about 2,000 points. I mean, that's assuming, pretty good health. But, then, he would be, he'd be jumping up that list pretty well. I mean, he'd be in the top, he'd be close to the top 20 at that point.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. He's going to keep chipping away little by little. And definitely.
Yeah. There's a lot of guys who are very crowded on that list. So, I think he's going to he's very, very likely to get to, 30,000 points of his career, which would put him around 10th or so.
Yeah.
So,
for sure.
Yeah.
And then Carmelo. Interestingly enough, he's another case that, you kind of forget how, good of a scorer Carmelo was, how long he played. Top 10 all-time in points. He is only 1,226 behind Shaquille O'Neal for 10th place. That's NBA only. It's going to be a little tough for Melo to do this year. He scored 924 last year, 895 in 2020. And the last time he's been over 1,000 was in 2018 for Oklahoma City. So, I don't. It depends. I guess it depends what he does this year. If he comes back for another year, if he does 2 years, he can definitely get there. I do not think Carmelo Anthony's scoring 1,226 points this year. So I think Shaq's place in the top 10 is safe for now. If he comes back another year, of course, then he would probably pass him up. But real quick here about Carmelo, only 112 points behind fellow Nuggets legend Dan Issel as well in career points. So,
yeah, if you combine NBA and ABA.
Right. So
Carmelo's 10th, 12th there. So he would pass, and then obviously if he passes, he's at least 11th, and then passing check. Yeah, I think he could do it over two seasons, depending on if he lasts. Obviously, he was almost out of the league at one point, although he was effective last year. But he's, another guy who's getting older, and I have less confidence that he's going to be as lasting in the league that, someone like LeBron or maybe even Chris Paul would be.
Right, for sure. So we'll see. Keep an eye on that for him, top 10 all time. But, we'll see, and we'll do some other stuff too. We're going to talk about team milestones a little bit later, and we're going to do some run numbers. But we got to get to this. It's dominated the offseason. It's holdouts, Jason. Tell me about holdouts. Tell me about contract negotiations and lawyers and injunctions. Yeah. Give me it all. Give me all the fun stuff here.
I'm going to tell you all about. We love injunctions. That's one of our favorite topics in maybe history. So yeah, as you alluded to, one of the biggest offseasons. I guess two of them. Has been, first of all, the holdout of Ben Simmons, trade request demand, whatever you would call it, with the Philadelphia 76ers, and how that situation as of this writing is not resolved. In fact, today, Simmons was suspended by the 76ers for the opening of the game after he was thrown out of practice by Doc Rivers. So not going great there. We'll see if a trade is able to happen or if he misses a lot of time. But he is technically back with the team despite that one-game suspension. And then Kyrie Irving, at the moment, the only NBA player who's unable to play the season because of the vaccine mandate. He has refused to get vaccinated because of the rules in New York City. He basically cannot play in the NBA this season unless he gets vaccinated. So we'll see how that goes. But that made us think, okay, well, let's look at some other situations that were, you know, that were basically holdouts that led to a significant number of missed games or a trade. I'm sure that there are probably some key ones that we missed here, but we tried to pick ones that involved an all-star or a top draft pick, again, that led to a significant number of missed games. So the first one, 1967, the Los Angeles Lakers traded Rudy LaRusso to Baltimore for Mel Kuntz. And then soon afterward, the Bullets shipped LaRusso to Detroit for Ray Scott. So LaRusso's like, I don't know if I want to leave LA and go to Detroit. That might not be totally fun for me. So the Lakers decided, let's call off the trade and let's bring him back and then everything will be good. Well, apparently Baltimore, Detroit, not super excited about that idea. And so the NBA Board of Commissioners soon ruled that LaRusso had to report to Detroit. Then LaRusso said, hey, I'm not going to go to Detroit. So the NBA suspended him, and LaRusso thought about suing, but I guess he ended up retiring for the remainder of the season. He then returned, went to the Warriors, and then made the All-Star team. So so fun, I don't know, fun little story there. So some other key ones, 1971, Earl Monroe holding out from the Bullets after they had just made the finals, and then was traded from the Bullets to the Knicks, of course. So he would also have a brief holdout later on toward the end of his career with the Knicks, but only a couple missed games there. Archie Clark with the Bullets. He had been an all-star the prior season. He held it for 42 games. Archie was definitely – he was one of the players who was profiled in the recent Sam Smith book. I'm blanking on the name of the book, but it was about, you know, some of the history of player activism in the 60s and 70s. And Archie was one of the key guys there. So definitely, he was a fun
hard labor. Hard labor is the name of the book, I think. Is that the one you're talking about?
Yep. That's the one. Thank you. Yes, that is the one. So, the Bulls were fans of this. Imagine the Bulls having an acrimonious relationship with their players.
Which is unbelievable because it's like a whole different management. But the next 3 days you're going to say are all Bulls. What the hell?
Yeah.
All good Bulls too.
Right. 1975, Bob Love and Norm Van Leer, you know, missed basically the first 2 months of the season with holdouts. This is actually the year they made the Western Conference Finals with the Warriors after trading for Nate Thurmond, playing the Warriors, who, you know, would go into the finals without Nate Thurmond. So it didn't really affect the team super much because they obviously were really good. I think they went further in the playoffs than they had in the previous seasons. Then 76, Chet Walker held out, ended up losing an antitrust suit and retired, even though he was, you know, he was in his mid 30s, but he had, you know, was one of the more effective forwards in the league at that point. Absolutely putting up great numbers. So he ended up retiring and had a, you know, like a lot of these Bulls didn't have a great relationship with the league afterwards. So really famous one, of course, 1977, the first merger season, Julius Irving has a holdout with the Nets and ends up getting traded to the 76ers for a lot of cash. Brian Taylor in 1978 season with Denver, he actually left the team during the season. There was a dispute. He claimed the Nuggets had offered him a loan, and they apparently did not give him the loan that they offered. And he ended up winning an arbitration case, became a free agent, and signed with the new Clippers in the 1979 season, where he would lead the league in three-pointers. So a little fun Brian Taylor fact there. A few in the early 80s, 1981. We talked about this one a couple shows ago, so I won't dig into it too much, but Gus Williams ended up holding out for the whole season with the Sonics. This was right after they had traded Dennis Johnson and, you know, just coming off a couple years after their championship year. Same season, Kiki Vandeweghe, who was the top pick for the Mavericks, the expansion Mavericks, ended up forcing a trade to Denver after a 30-game holdout. The next season, Marcus Johnson, he had a big contract dispute with the Milwaukee Bucks. There's a fun story here from November of 1981 where his agent said, okay, if the NBA is not going to have me, I'm not going to have my client. He is going to pursue an acting and a modeling career. His agent said, these are very serious offers. The opportunities are there, and Marcus is interested in acting and modeling. And in the future,
he would do it. Marcus Johnson. We were looking at his IMDb a little bit earlier, and obviously most famous roles, probably White Men Can't Jump, but several other ones. What was it? L.A. Law he was on an episode of.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, a lot of other basketball movies. They said, hey, Marcus.
Your favorite movie, Forget Paris?
Forget Paris, yeah, a movie that I have referenced on the show before. So, what was the Mark Wahlberg flick he was in recently? It was
The Gambler.
Yeah, there you go. Never saw it. Never going to see it, but hey, good for him.
He played Game Color Man is what
Really? So, oh, jeez. Yeah, well, right.
Hey, he was Jury Foreman in Boston Legal.
So. Jury Foreman number three. Yeah. That's good,
Yeah, that's good, So
he's got to be tough to cast, though. I'd imagine that's and I get why he probably got a lot of basketball roles, because it's like...
He's very tall,
kind of tough to be like... He's 6'7", he's a big dude, so it's hard, unless he's going to be like an intimidating presence, that's basically how you can use him best, but he should have been in a way more like kind of cop dramas, and I guess he wasn't a decent amount of them.
He looks like
a good deputy or like the I don't know my cop terms, but... like the commissioner or something like that. They're like, uh-oh, and he like opens the door.
The police commissioner,
He takes his hat off and puts it down on the table, and they're like, uh-oh, we're in trouble. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because he's got kind of an ominous presence about him. So,
He could give, a renegade cop a good lecture.
Yeah, exactly. That's not how we do things around here. He puts his leg up on a chair and puts his hand on his hip and goes, I don't know what precinct you
think we're
working for.
We don't have cowboys here.
Exactly.
Yeah. You follow my law or you get out of here. Something like that. I want your badge and your gun.
Yeah, exactly.
Effective. Yeah, exactly.
So maybe we should just do that. I'll start working on the pilot so we can...
We're going to do a cop drama.
I mean, I don't want to,
cop drama? Yeah, no, I think we need to rethink that.
Okay, fine.
I think there's a gem of an idea here, but we'll talk about it offline. We'll figure it out.
Oh, yeah, we don't want to give up the goods.
No, I don't want to give up the good stuff.
anyway, so they called his bluff. Not here, but he ended up, I think, what would he start getting at in late 80s or so when he actually retired? But hey, he wasn't wrong.
Right. And he ended up getting his money too. And of course, he got traded.
Best of both worlds.
Later, because they were kind of like, we don't actually want to pay you this much. We want to get younger. So, it worked out okay. So, next same season, Paul Westfall. So I had forgotten about this. So Paul Westfall, of course, traded for Dennis Johnson, goes to the Sonics. Has an injury plagued season. He's older. So he was making about $700,000 and then, he was a free agent. Sort of a free agent. So, it was sort of weird because this was, when we talked about this again, a couple episodes ago, where when we talked about, kind of the history of, free agency, talking about in the '70s and the '80s, and this was right after the NBA kind of tweaked the rules. It was still restricted and it gave teams, it was the right of first refusal. So it gave teams even more power. So Seattle had offered, Westfall $200,000. He's making $700,000 before. Now, he'd been hurt and was older, but basically didn't get an offer from another NBA team. So it was unclear at that point whether Seattle actually had his rights or whether, another team could go in. It was like they'd never really been challenged before. So ended up getting resolved. He ended up signing with the Knicks. It did okay there. I mean, obviously it was a role player there, but they had a couple of good seasons with him. So, didn't really, didn't add up to much, but that was sort of an interesting story.
Yeah. I don't remember that one at all. So it's a good pull.
Yeah. A few more. 1985, Joe Barry Carroll played for Italy for a year instead of disappointing with the Golden State Warriors. Josh Childress did something similar, playing in Greece, later on, of course, in the 2000s, playing in Greece for two seasons before returning to the NBA. Joe Barry Carroll would come back to the Warriors after that season and actually be an all-star for a season, so he did okay. Ricky Pierce with Bucks, again with Bucks being a little cheap. He missed 45 games, had a holdout with 45 games, which was the year after he won his first of two Sixth Man of the Year awards. Danny Ferry, we talked about him, also recently held out with the didn't want to play with the Clippers.
Can't blame him there for sure.
Ended up playing in Europe for a year and then ended up getting traded to the Cavaliers. 1992, Rod Strickland, a two-month contract holdout with the Spurs. He'd already had a little bit of controversy in the league with other situations, so definitely was not that fan base was the Spurs not necessarily known for at that point for like being the most patient fan base. So got some boos when he returned to the game. You know, ungrateful. How dare he try to actually, you know, make a decent amount of money. You know, how dare he?
Yeah.
How dare he hold out? Yeah.
Lovely San Antonio. Just, you know, take whatever the lovely town of San Antonio gives you. All right.
So. Absolutely. Yeah. Hey, yeah. Respect the Spurs. 1993, Jim Jackson only played 28 games in his rookie season for the historically horrible Dallas Mavericks that season. We've talked about them a few times. And then, the most recent example that I can really think of significance was Anderson Varejao and Sasha Pavlovic, the follow-up season after the Cavs made the NBA Finals. And obviously, you know, Varejao and especially Sasha were really, you know, key cogs in that team. They both ended up signing later on, early on in the season. Varejao held up the longest. He ended up signing a offer sheet with the Bobcats that was finally matched. And then, you know, and obviously had a good career with the Cavaliers.
Absolutely, yeah. And there's some other, obviously, you know, holdouts of like guys with, you know, Juwan Howard and Glenn Robinson are ones that some people, you know, brought up when we asked for this. But they technically didn't miss a ton of time during the season. They were rookie holdouts.
Right.
Yeah, but these are like significant holdouts here.
Exactly.
You know, big chunks of time. So yeah, those are the most recent ones there. So yeah, we'll see how long this Ben Simmons, that saga doesn't seem like it's ending anytime soon. And the Kyrie saga doesn't seem like it's ending anytime soon. So we'll see. These could be another... like you said, very, very rare. I mean, it happened a lot in the 60s and the 70s, slowed down a little bit in the 90s, and now we might potentially have two, you know, relatively big names doing it in the same season as well. So,
yeah, we'll see how it goes.
Very, very interesting. All right, Jason, let's talk about nice, tidy, round numbers.
Round numbers. Truly round numbers. Not
yeah,
75,
real.
75,
yeah.
Not a round number.
Exactly.
We established that here. So that's good.
Not. Yeah. Points. Kevin Durant, 24,000 points. He's only 117 away from getting to that mark. We talked about him a little bit earlier. Russell Westbrook, only 143 points away from 22,000. And Chris Paul, only 22 points away from 20,000 points.
20,000,
for his career. Yeah, so good stuff by them.
Yeah.
Games. Sorry, go ahead.
Question for you. How many players in NBA history do you think have scored more than 20,000 points?
More than 20,000 points, I am going to say
a round number, so I'll give you a
40.
50.
Wow. All right.
Yeah. Chris Paul be 51. Wow. This is the ABA, by the way.
So. Of course. Oh yeah. Like we always tend to do that.
Yeah,
on the show,
yeah, exactly. Right.
We don't.
Yep. Yeah.
We're smart. We know what we're doing here.
We do. Yeah.
Games played here. Andre Iguodala, 8 games away from getting to 1,200 games played. Carmelo Anthony, 9 away from doing it. And Dwight Howard, 18 away from 1,200 career games. 1,100 career games. This is making me feel old with some of these guys.
Sure.
Trevor Ariza, 6 games away from 1,100 games. I feel like I've watched a lot of, like, pretty much all of Trevor Ariza's career I've been there for and watched, which is makes you feel really, really old. Chris Paul. Go ahead.
He was a rookie the same year as... Was he 2005? So he was a rookie the same year, the year after Dwight, right?
Yes.
I think so. Yeah. So that's a long time ago.
Yeah, I guess I've seen all of Dwight's career too. All right. I'm just old.
Hey.
All right.
Hey, it's okay. It's okay. Fine. So worth noting, there have been, 45 players who have played 1,200 or more games in NBA, ABA history. So just to give a sense of context for numbers.
Of how rare these are. Yeah, 1,100 games. Chris Paul, 10 games away from doing it. Lou Williams, 33 games away from doing it. And Paul Millsap, 48 games away from doing it. And then the roundest of the round, 1,000 career games. J.R. Smith, he's 23 away. He's currently golfing somewhere, so I don't know about that. But we'll see. Maybe the Lakers come calling. That seems like something they would probably do this year. Jeff Green, he's 24 away. He's still a semi-productive player, so I think he's going to do that pretty easily. And the Kyle Lowry, he's only 40 away, and he's obviously a very productive player still at this day. So.
There is one NBA player who has played exactly 1,000 games in his career.
Oh, man.
He played in the 90s. I'll give you a hint.
Shoot.
He's a three-point.
Is it Dan Marley?
Dan Marley, no.
Damn.
Nope. That's not a bad guess, though. Yeah.
Steve Kerr?
He ended his career with the Lakers.
Three-point shooter ended his career with the Lakers.
Yeah, he was a star. He was like an all-star level player.
Oh, crap. Not Mitch Richmond?
Oh, Glenn Rice.
I'm
sorry. I was wrong. Glenn Rice did not end his career with the Lakers. He actually played for four of the teams after, or three of the teams after the Lakers.
Yeah, so. But they were all real pathetic, and nobody should remember those. So that's totally fair.
Yeah.
To do that. All right, field goals. 13,000 field goals. LeBron is only 97 away from doing that, so I think that's probably going to happen. Uh-huh. 10,000 field goals. Carmelo Anthony is 200 away from doing that, so nice, good numbers there.
And just as we mentioned, LeBron's obviously third all-time in field goals, and there have been 18 players with more than 10,000 field goals in their career, so that's a very rare number.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Good for him. Three-pointers. These are a lot of guys coming into the run here. As you mentioned, LeBron James, 21 away from getting to 2,000 three-pointers for his career. Damian Lillard is 49 away from getting 2,100 three-pointers in his career. 1,500, Chris Paul, 19 away from that. Danny Green, 42 away from that. 18,000, you have Klay Thompson. He's 2 away. Paul George, 39 away. 1,700, Kevin Durant's only 45 away from that. Then 1,600, Trevor Ariza, again, 15 away from it. Kemba Walker, he's only 10 away. And Carmelo Anthony, only 18 away from getting to 1,600. So I think a lot of these men are going to get their nice round milestones here. Free throws real quick. 8,000 free throws all time. LeBron is 418 away from that. James Harden is 426 away from 7,000 free throws. Kevin Durant is 48 away from 6,000. And DeMar DeRozan, 327 away from getting 5,000 free throws in his career as well. So it's a nice, interesting one here. 10,000 total rebounds in their career. DeAndre Jordan, 122 away. And LeBron James, 249 away. So that'll be interesting to see what those guys. Yeah, DeAndre Jordan, like, that's a lot of rebounds for DeAndre Jordan, man. Like, like, he hasn't played that long, but he's a prolific rebounder there for a couple of years. So obviously things are slowing down tremendously, and who knows? I mean, I think he could probably get to 122 this season, I would hope.
Yeah,
but
he's played for the Lakers, right? He's one of like 1,000 players.
Yeah, he's one of the 15 old dudes that they're like, maybe this 36-year-old will be good.
maybe.
If we just get all the 36-year-olds, they can't all be hurt at the same time, right?
That's, exactly. So, Jordan and James are 45th and 46th all-time in total rebounds.
Okay, they're the top 50 guys. Yeah. DeAndre Jordan, a top 50 rebounder of all time. It's pretty wild, but makes sense.
I wonder if LeBron's he's like, I don't know, 700 away from top 40 there. So I don't know. How many rebounds is LeBron James going to see? I feel like I don't have a good sense of
LeBron's rebounding prowess. Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't either.
So
yeah.
He's, let's see, it's 7.7 last year per game, which added up to 346 total rebounds last year. That'd be about two seasons worth. He'll probably play more than 45 games next year. But anyway.
Let's hope so. Jesus, let's hope. definitely hope.
Yeah.
So I'm going to kind of go along quickly now so we can get through these and get to our other stuff here. 10,000 assists, LeBron James, 304 away from doing that. Steals, LeBron James also, he's 37 away from getting 2,100. Rajon Rondo, 12 away from getting a 1,500 steals. Thaddeus Young, we're talking Thaddeus Young here, 19 steals away from getting a 1,500 steals in his career as well. So good for Thaddeus Young. And then lastly, 1,000 blocks. Andre Drummond, 13 away from getting 1,000 blocks. Kevin Durant, 14 away from getting 1,000 blocks. And then again, LeBron James, 18 away from getting 1,000 blocks. And Dwight Howard, we should mention here at the top of this list here, 8 blocks away from getting 2,200 blocks in his career. So NBA.com, if you are into more milestones and you're curious about this stuff, NBA.com had a really good article about team milestones. We're not going to do it on this episode because there's just a lot of them, but they're fun things of example, Trae Young needs 4 more three-pointers to pass Dominique Wilkins for 6th in both categories. Just little stuff like that. There's fun names to kind of bring up, and you're like, Kerry Kittles is one of the best Nets of all time. Like, that's not that good. And it's a fun experiment in what teams are good but haven't been good ever, or what teams are really, really bad now that we're good. All it's fun stuff. But the one that blew my mind the most, and again, NBA.com has that for you, Duncan Robinson, Jason, from the Miami Heat.
Right.
He is 6th and 7th in Miami history in career three-pointers. I think he's played there
with 6th in three-pointers and 7th in attempts. Yeah.
Yes, right.
Right, yes.
And
excuse me for one second.
Oh, sorry, yes.
6th and 7th in three-pointers, but now I understand.
Yeah, yes. And then this season, if he does what he did last year, he will become number three in Miami Heat history in three-pointers made. And it's not like, you know what I mean? Shouldn't be surprising. Like, it makes sense that that's the case, but it's like Duncan Robinson's already like the one of the most prolific three-point shooters in Miami Heat history. And it's like, man, he's played there for like 3 years. But when you shoot threes in an era where they shoot threes, and you know, there was an era where they didn't shoot threes. You'll do that pretty quickly. All right. But let's do real quickly. We'll end out here with miscellaneous jersey and ball history. Jason, you ready to talk balls and jerseys?
I love to talk about balls and jerseys.
Let's do it. Dennis Schroeder is the first Celtic to ever wear the number 71. He usually wears number 17, but then he found out when he signed with the Celtics that he can't be 17 because John Havlicek had that number. So he asked his fans what number they wanted him to choose, and they ended up choosing 71. I think it was a Twitter poll or Instagram live poll or something like that. So that brought me to the question of, well, how many numbers are left untouched for the Boston Celtics? And Jason, there are 34 numbers left untouched by the Boston Celtics. They are all weird as fuck, the ones that are left. So 39 has never been used. 47, never been used. 48, 49, never been used. 57, 58, 59, never used. 61, 62, never used. 64, 65, 67, 68, 69 never used by Boston, so I'm kind of surprised that
we need Dwight Howard to go to Boston.
You're right. Someone soon will ascend to that number 69.
Or Dennis Rodman, maybe Dennis Rodman can come out.
That'd work out pretty well.
Makes sense.
And then the rest of them are kind of ridiculous. 72, 73, 74, 75, 76. I mean, I guess those are ridiculous, but Dennis Schroeder is going to walk out with 71, so I guess that ridiculous. 80, 81, 82, 83, 84, 85, 87. Yes, there has been a number 86 in Boston Celtics history. 89, yes, there's been an 88 as well. 91, yes, there was a 90, 92, 95, 96, and 97 are the only numbers not left for the Celtics, so... 34 numbers still up for grabs. If you want to be the first Celtic to ever wear number 67, you can do that. So
there have been only three players in NBA history to wear the number 71, according to Basketball Reference.
Ooh, okay. I don't know. Ooh, can I guess any of them, you think? Or
the two of them were on the 60s San Francisco Warriors.
So, probably not.
Probably not going to guess these.
Okay. Wilt Chamberlain.
And not Wilt Chamberlain.
Okay, then I don't know.
McCoy McLemore, Willie Nahls, and... Bob Weisenhahn of the 1962.
Oh, Bob Weisenhahn.
I mean, you are one of the biggest Bob Weisenhahn fans.
Of course,
Bob,
71. Of course. Bob Weisenhahn's number.
Of course, obviously, you know, by all 62, all 60 games of his career.
Of course.
You've got the videos.
I got them on VHS. So not even VHS. I got them on film reel. I should run that film every so often.
You translated them to Beta for some reason.
Right. I thought it was going to work. I thought Beta was going to win. Right. It should have won. Beta should have won. Was so much better than VHS.
It was so much better.
Anyway, speaking of jersey retirements and numbers, Pistons rookie Cade Cunningham, he wore number 2 at Oklahoma State and said, you know what? I want to be number 2 again. And the Pistons said, okay, here's the problem. We retired that number in 1997 because Chuck Daly won 2 titles for us.
Right.
So Cade Cunningham went, I'd really like to be number 2. And they said, you know what? Yeah. We'll call Chuck Daly's family.
Yeah.
And Chuck Daly's family said, whatever, we don't care. Yeah, so Cade Cunningham is number 2. So.
All right, cool.
So there we go. I don't know that they didn't actually, I shouldn't quote them as saying, we don't care. Right. Maybe they said, we do care. And the Pistons said, here's a truck of money. And they said, you know what? We don't care that much anymore. So,
okay. Maybe.
I don't know how the transaction went, but Cade Cunningham in that will wear number 2, even though it is retired for Chuck Daly, but now it's unretired. Speaking of retired numbers again, the Grizzlies went into this year with no retired numbers. But Jason, at the end of this year, they will have retired numbers because Zach Randolph's number 50 prior to the December 11th game against the Rockets will be raised to the rafters of whatever they're calling their arena now. I forget what it is. Is it still the FedEx Center Forum or something?
Forum, I believe so.
Okay, well, whatever it's called, it's not the pyramid. That's all I know.
I drove by it recently. I drove by the pyramid as well. So.
Oh yeah, the pyramid. Yeah, the pyramid's like a Cabela's now, isn't it, or a Bass Pro Shop or something?
Bass Pro Shop, I believe. I went to the Sun Records Museum in Memphis. It's excellent.
I've heard good things. I got to get to Memphis. Yeah. I've never been there, and I need to get there. So
I only drove through. I didn't get to spend much time there, but I would love to go back. So. Maybe we can go together. We'll go
to Bass Pro Shop and then catch a good Grizzlies game.
Absolutely, yeah.
Well, if we go January 8th, we'll see Tony Allen's number 9 be raised to the rafters as well.
Suggest that maybe with Tony Allen's recent indictment, they may postpone that retirement.
Yes, that one is a TBD on the old Tony Allen raising to the rafters. So we'll see about that one.
I would not get those January
tickets. Maybe don't buy the hotel room just yet. So
I would suggest that. Yeah.
Rookie power forward for the Grizzlies. Speaking of the Grizzlies, Romeo Weems is going to be wearing double zero for the Grizzlies, but interesting, they already have a zero. D'Anthony Melton already wears zero. So
a single zero.
Instead of Romeo Weems saying, then I'll just be 72. He decided, no, I want to be double zero. And D'Anthony Melton says, no, I want to be zero. So we're going to have a team of a zero and a double zero. So we went to uniwatch.com. This has been done before, probably more than you think it's been done before.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
So 1990 and 1991 for this the Los Angeles Clippers. Olden Polonis was zero, and Benoit Benjamin was double zero.
Yeah.
Then both those men were traded to the Supersonics.
Wow.
And they decided, I'm going to be zero and I'm going to be double zero. So Olden Polonis and Benoit Benjamin for the Supersonics in that same year. 1992, the Detroit Pistons. Orlando Woolridge was his famous number zero.
Sure.
William Bedford was double zero.
William Bedford. Yeah.
Yep.
My favorite Bedford.
Absolutely. 2000 season, Cleveland Cavaliers. Larry Kettner was zero. And Benoit Benjamin still in the league. If you put a gun to my head and said, did Benoit Benjamin play for the 2000 Cleveland Cavaliers, I would say absolutely not. And I would be dead.
Three games.
If you said, all right.
Yeah. Yes.
If you get this right, I won't kill you. And I would say, there's no way.
No way.
There's no way. I'm surviving. I'm living. I'm good. And then they would say, unfortunately, no. Benoit Benjamin played for the 2000 Cavaliers. He was bad by like 1993. How did he hang along that long? So good for him.
He was big, anyway, man. You could just give Shaq five fouls and you'd be
get paid. Paid, baby. All right. Yeah. 2013. It took a little while for it to happen again. 76ers. Jeremy Pargo was number zero. Spencer Hawes was double zero. And then the Sixers decided they were going to be bad on purpose. And then it happened again. 2014. Darius Johnson Odom was zero. Spencer Hawes kept his double zero. So he had it again. That same year, 2014, Aaron Brooks for the Denver Nuggets. He is zero. Daryl Arthur, double zero. Then, believe it or not, it would happen 2016, 2017, and 2018. Because Emmanuel Mudiay came to town as a zero. And Daryl Arthur was like, I'm still going to be double zero, man. So they did it again. Then, Jason, four different teams in 2017. Did you know it? I thought this was something new and interesting, and it's really not making history at all, but it's a fun little exercise here.
Can we go for it? Yeah. We've committed to the bit. We might as well finish it.
Absolutely, we have. This is Gary Payton, but I believe it's Gary Payton the second. I got confused there for a second, being like, hold on a minute. Now, I'm definitely dying if you told me it's Gary Payton, a 2017 Milwaukee Buck. I'm like, no way. Get out of here.
But it's impossible.
Anyway. Gary Payton Jr., or the second, and Spencer Hawes were both there. Cavaliers, Kevin Love, zero. Chris Anderson, double zero. Briante Weber for the Hornets. Spencer Hawes again. I don't know where Spencer Hawes goes. He adds into this mix here. Yeah. And then this is an interesting wrinkle here. So Aaron Brooks joins the Indiana Pacers in 2017. CJ Miles is zero. Aaron Brooks has been zero before. But he decides, I'll just be double zero. So he's double zero this year.
Right.
So that's incredible.
How many guys have done the both?
I don't know. That's a fun trivia question there. Who has been zero and double zero?
All right.
And then 2018, real quickly here, the Knicks, Troy Williams, Enes Kanter, Magic, Jamel Artis, Aaron Gordon, and the 76ers, Jared Bayless, and Jacob Pullen were all there. And then 2019, the Heat, Josh Richardson, Yante Maten, I believe is how you pronounce his name, but I do not know anything about Yante Maten. Knicks, Kadeem Allen, and Enes Kanter. And then the Trailblazers, Enes Kanter going over to the team, Damian Lillard, and Enes Kanter. So you got that. And then Jason, you said you wanted to talk about balls, and we are going to talk about balls because we got a big ball discussion here, a big ball change in the NBA. For the first several decades, the NBA's game ball was made by Wilson. Then in 1983, in kind of a stunning turnaround here, it goes to Spalding. They take over the ball contract for the NBA, and they've had that since 1983. This season, going back to Wilson, baby.
Wilson!
Yep.
Yeah.
Evolutions going on to the court. So that's my preferred basketball is the Wilson Evolution. So that's curious. Fun that, how that's happening. So we'll see. We'll see if it's a – I wonder if it'll be a big controversy. Like, remember the rubber ball year where the NBA was like, here's the new balls. They're good. And everyone's like, these balls suck. And they're like, no, they're fine. And then, like, halfway through the year, they're like, those balls suck. Sorry, guys. We're going to get you new balls. So, that was a very interesting pay. So far, watching the little bit of the first game, it looks like it's okay. Guys are shooting okay. Shots are being made in this game. So I think it'll be okay. So we'll see.
But
big switch here. 1983. Spalding had done it all the way until 2021. So
Nice. So I'm looking at the list of both zeros and double zeros. So far, I found Mike Bibby.
Okay.
Mike Bibby did it in 2011. Yep. He was with the Wizards and with the Heat. Take me a little while to get through this entire list. I'm not seeing anyone else who stands out quite at the moment. So there are many fewer double zeros than there are. Only 43 double zeros where there have been 118 zeros. So anyway, so we know it's at least been done by one other player. Perhaps we will do the research into the future to see if there are any others, single and double zeros.
But, yeah, or if you know off the top of your head, you're idiots. It's clearly this guy.
We got Jeff Teague. Jeff Teague did it.
He's a famous
double zero for the Hawks. Yeah. So when he came back to the Hawks for a second time, he was a double zero instead of a single zero. So
that's great company. Aaron Brooks, Jeff Teague. Those are just some of my favorites. Pretty solid bench.
Yeah.
Dudes. Like, yeah. Good guys. Yeah. Just guys. Yeah, solid.
Guys.
Yeah. So yeah. Good for them.
All right. Good for them. I agree.
You know, it takes a lot of ambition to be a zero. That's a big number. You know what I mean? Like, that's. It's a rough, you know, it's a tough number. It takes a certain man to be, you know,
to zero. It does. Yeah, so. Absolutely. You got to be comfortable with yourself to be a zero.
Yeah, exactly. And a double zero, that's double comfort. So.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, unless you're Robert Parrish and you're timeless. It's hard.
If you hit
the double zero, that's a tough one right there. Yeah, cool.
We made history. The NBA season's going to make history.
All right. It is going to make history. Yeah. So, yeah, we'll see how it goes. I'm sure we will be back probably once the NBA announces its official 75 list. I'm sure we will have some thoughts on that. We'll have some thoughts on how the NBA chooses to honor its history during the season, and enjoy the whatever interesting milestones or happenings go on. We'll be getting a historical perspective on that. Plus, whatever we decide we want to get into. Sometimes we're a little bit go off on tangents here, but I think it makes it fun.
Absolutely. I enjoy it. So thank you for doing this. And yeah, let's go watch some basketball, man.
All right. Absolutely. So thanks everyone for checking us out. You can find us at The Step Back at fansided.com. You can find us wherever podcasts are played. Please leave a rating and review. And you can find us on Twitter and Facebook, both of them at Over and Back NBA. So thanks for listening, and we're back again soon.